The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Coming up on the show this week. The Mags kick off the season in style with a comfortable opening day win amid jubilant scenes. A day in the life, George goes behind the scenes at revitalised St James's Park. And how long do you want? Eddie puts pen to paper on a new long-term deal. Yes, hello once again. This is Pod on the Tyne. I am Taylor Payne, and you're very welcome along to this celebration of the start of another Premier League season for Newcastle United. And what a start it was.
Birds flying high. Sun in the sky, you
know. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me.
Shot on target. Oh, he's done anything on it. Taking on his man into the area. Here's Alan San Maximo, but it's straight at Dean Henderson, a low right footed shot. Fabian Schär. Takes charge down the line for Joe Linton. The cut back towards Wilson! Callum Wilson doubles Newcastle's lead. And he scores on the opening weekend for the third season.
Of course, I'm joined as always by Mr. George Cogan and Flight Lieutenant Christopher Waffles. George, you all right? What a weekend, eh?
Well, we're feeling good, aren't we? We are feeling good.
Absolutely.
What a start. It was everything we could have wanted and a bit more too.
Great fun.
Yeah, brilliant. Just great. I was slightly nervous beforehand that I'd built myself up a bit too much, that we'd all built things up too much, but turned out to be just perfect.
Chris, you couldn't have written a more perfect script for an opening day, could you, than that?
I couldn't. I mean, you're so jubilant, you've promoted me to flight lieutenant. I mean, that's not usually I'm in shock. That shocked me more than what I saw at the weekend.
That's fair enough. It's just your increments, Chris. You go up every year regardless. It's not performance-based or anything. So don't be getting ideas above your station.
What a wonderful weekend. I mean, we're going to get into it all, but everyone was so energised. And I think, if anything, they've actually left the weekend even more energised for the season ahead. That's the power of what happened on Saturday, and it was certainly another memorable occasion.
Yeah, what a boost it is to have a day like that to kick the season off with. George, this piece you've written for The Athletic, it came out pretty much straight after the weekend, and it's been brilliantly received by everyone. I absolutely loved reading it myself this morning. A new dawn, a new day for Newcastle United, and you were there with everybody behind the scenes this weekend.
Thank you. Yeah, I've wanted to do this for a while, to sort of do that match day in the life of the stadium and to try and explain what the stadium means and what the club means through the people that work there, through the people who come and watch the football. And of course, there's a very different feeling now around the place than there was a few years ago or even 12 months ago. And so I just wanted to tell that story. It was a lot of work, but I was with a few people who work at the club. I was with War Flags, people behind War Flags, on Friday night as they got ready for the display. The next day, I was spent time with the groundsman, Andy Tully. He's been there for 25 years, with Ray Thompson in the kit man, in the dressing room before kickoff. What a privilege it was to sort of see the shirts hanging there, feel the sort of silence as it was there, knowing that that's the place where it kind of all happens. I was had some time with the head chef. I had some time with Serena Taylor, the brilliant photographer, yes, and up in the box as well, where the music gets played and all that. It was a proper privilege to be with those people. But yeah, I wanted to tell the story of home. And yeah, I said, War Flags have done so much for the stadium. We know that. It's Matt Ritchie now talks about it as the Stadium of Flags, which I kind of love, and saying, yeah, it'll be famous because of it. I was with them on the Friday night, and firstly, I asked Graham Robson and Thomas Concannon, one of our friends of the podcast, why they chose those Nina Simone lyrics.
It feels like a new dawn. It really, really does. It's like 14 years of just nastiness and like. Yeah. And I'll be honest, George, I mean, I packed my ticket in, and I, it sounds bizarre. The thing that I love more than anything, I started to hate.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of Ashley. And when we scored, I felt like a bit, like I wasn't happy, you know? Yeah. Like,
it's horrible, that feeling, isn't it?
Yeah. And like, I couldn't, it was hard to like sort of work out in my brain what the hell was going on. I was so confused, and I didn't want to come back. But then as soon as the takeover, it was like a switch, it was just instant.
And I love that. You know, I love that. It is important to remind us of how it felt. You know, you're talking about Graham, someone who first came to the stadium in the late 60s and had a season ticket from 1974 onwards. You know, that relationship was strained beyond breaking point. But the Flags came back in for the Spurs game. Graham came back for the Spurs game. And of course, it's a very different feeling now. I love, in that little clip, you can hear the echo of the empty stadium behind them. And we were laying the flags out and getting the banner ready, and they broke for a slice of pizza and had a laugh. And it's just these normal lads and lasses, just great people. But they've done so much. They've done so much for the atmosphere. And a little later on in the conversation, we all started getting a little bit emotional, and we talked about their relationship to that place, to the stadium. And this is what they said.
Ah, oh, it's everything.
It's the church, isn't it? I was brought up a good Catholic, and it's just.
I can't.
I don't think my vocabulary is good enough.
It's really hard to describe. I couldn't be without this. Yeah. This is what I do. Like, the fixture list come out, I don't ever intend on missing a game, home or away. It's just because it's what I do. It's what I've always done.
I don't do the aways now. I used to do it like in the 80s, hardly ever missed. Yeah. I don't do the aways now. It's just, you know, I'm just working all the time, but.
And what I've always said, though, so I'm lucky enough to have a very supportive and loving wife home, which always helps people in our scenario. But it's this place is just it's different. It's different from any other place in the country.
Chris, the dedication of those people and the graft and the sacrifice, it's just monumental, isn't it?
It is. I mean, they spend so much time there. What's great in the piece itself, there's a great quote from Graham where he talks about how he was out for a meal with his wife in the middle of Newcastle.
Yeah.
And a message pops up on his phone from the group of lads up at the ground. And basically she says to him, you'd rather be there than here, wouldn't you? And he drops her off at home and then goes up and joins her. That's how much they enjoy what they do. But the attention to detail, Eddie Howe spoke about it, and so many of the players have talked about it, like the way that they have added to the match day, and it is now part of the experience. It is so important for what they do. And again, what a wonderful display on Saturday. I was trying to think the other day what my favourite display they've done so far is, and I just remember another one and then another one, and you forget how many they do and how much time they do put into it. So no, absolutely wonderful.
It's astonishing.
Yeah.
There was, of course, a presentation for Derek Wright as well, friend of the show, who we had on not long ago at halftime, marking his 38-year service with the club. And a lovely moment there as he got to greet the crowd and got a great ovation as well.
Yeah, and what was nice about that is, and I suppose tying in with George's piece, is that Derek Wright had been such a long... So for so long, such a huge part of the club, and he is, along with the other people who George spoke to, the likes of Andy Tully, a groundsman who's been there for 25 years, Ray Thompson, the kit man. These are absolutely essential to the running of the football club, and particularly match day, but also every other day. I mean, Ray Thompson was described to George as the hardest working man at the club. He does that much now. And these are the people who you don't necessarily know a lot about, but they are the ones who make the whole club tick. They, even when things weren't brilliant as they are now, or seem to be now, they were the ones who have tied it all together and have allowed it all to keep going in the way that it is.
And what I kind of love about that and the presentation to Derek Wright, how did that come about? Well, Paul Dummett got in touch with War Flags. Paul Dummett, who's a lifer at Newcastle in terms of playing all his career there, got in touch with War Flags and suggested it. And of course, it's like an absolute no-brainer. Let's do it. War Flags had gone in to see the squad at the end of last season. They talk about how emotional Trippier and Richie were with them, and about how that, and Jamal Lascelles offering to help and said he would be in touch. So you have all those connections again. I talked to Serena, the photographer. You know, she's absolutely brilliant at her job. She considers herself a tough woman, and she sort of said, you know, this is my job. You know, I'm not really a football fan. But then when I asked her about her relationship to the stadium, she started weeping. And she started weeping in reference to War Flags and what it's like when the stadium is full and full of all that emotion. And so what you've got there, you've got all those links. And that is so important, because it's stuff we've wanked on about for ages on this podcast, about how Newcastle had stopped being a club, because a club is a collection of people. And Newcastle wasn't. It was like a collection of individuals. It's not that those people weren't doing their job to the best of their ability, but when it came to the important stuff, to the emotional stuff, fans were there under sufferance. Staff were there knowing that there was, you know, that there was a very, very low glass ceiling for what they could achieve. And people were being forced in separate directions. And now the emotion of a match day is because everybody is being brought together. And you feel that sense of power deep inside your soul on a match day, just knowing you might not win that day, but you're all there for the same reason, and you're all in it together, win or lose. And yeah, that's what I loved about those stories, that there were just those connections again. We've got it back.
Yeah, I mean, reading the piece, George, there was definitely a sense of people being freed from the restrictions of the Ashley era, and you know, where 16th or 17th in the league was going to be good enough, and there was no light at the end of the tunnel for those people. But the cheese board story stuck out in my mind as well when I read that, about them having to screw table desks apart, and you know, like little chair desks, and pulling them apart to create cheese boards, because the ones in the ground were falling to bits, and it was a health and safety issue.
Well,
this is a Premier League club.
Exactly, that's
sake.
Exactly
what's
it,
going on here,
Taylor. That is exactly it. You know, at that level, you know, the Premier League doesn't get any higher than the Premier League in this country. I mean, it is the absolute elite. And you've got all these people at the club trying their best. And it was a great reminder to me that it's not just about the first team. It's not just about the staff. It is also about these other people around the club who want the best. I mean, Serena, as I say, a great photographer. She wants to showcase Newcastle fans and Newcastle players around the world so that people can do what she did, which was come from Australia and to see St. James's Park and fall in love, in her words. You know that all these people are doing their best. And yeah, the cheese board story, that came from the head chef, who, you know, is a great fella, a Newcastle fan. He's got two boys who are season ticket holders. He's not watched he's watched 10 minutes of live football over 11 years, because his match day is spent going from kitchen to kitchen. And yeah, this idea, you know, so there are some people who pay a shitload of money to come to St. James's Park. And, you know, they go to, they've got their corporate sections, they've got their suites, and they pay for fine dining and so on and so forth. And the club wouldn't give money for new plates, things like that. And it's like, well, if you're charging people that amount of money and you're not able to kind of showcase yourself, what is the point? And yeah, the cheese board, The cheese board story is incredible. Cheese boards around the stadium falling to pieces, not being able to get replacements, and the head chef, using his own initiative, finding a storeroom, finding these chairs that have tables attached to them, probably from the press room, Chris, I'd imagine, and unscrewing them from a screwdriver he brought from home and refashioning them as cheese boards, because Mike Ashley's Newcastle wouldn't pay for new ones.
Incredible.
Yeah, astonishing.
The effect of all this, though, Chris, and all of this additional energy around the club is that it rolls onto the pitch, essentially, doesn't it? You end up with the players having more investment in it. The fans are now more emotionally invested. Everybody sees everybody pulling in the same direction. There's no longer a battle there. And it must have an effect on the players. The players must realise the club that they're fighting for and the fans that they're fighting for, and how important it is to everybody around the club. And you know, it has to roll onto the pitch.
I can't disagree. I think it must, and it does. And you can hear the players when they speak about it, and Eddie Howe, who speaks about it. And when he first came in, his big motto was that we need this unity is our strength. That's where we're going to... Then it was fashion survival from, and now it's build, and they've created that. It's not just been Eddie Howe, but he's obviously coming at a time when that was the direction the club was heading in, and it is wonderful to see. You know, and I don't want to do this because it sort of pains me to pay credit to George, but I am going to pay credit to George on the air and say that it was absolutely wonderful piece which nearly broke him, and this is the reason why he's beaten me to St James's Park each of the last three occasions. That's why he was at back-to-back friendlies almost against his will.
See, right, okay.
But he was it's sense. A very, very good piece. It really does capture that. I mean, you do learn so much about what you just take for granted as happens on a match day. But to hear that the head chef walks around for that amount of time, and to hear how the sort of PA does his announcements and things like that, it was very, very good. And actually, when we were in the press box on Saturday, I don't know if George will remember this because he was in a daze trying to write his piece at the time. But someone did come up to us, I think it was at half time, and again thanked us for the podcast, which was very, very kind of them. Yeah, another fan who came and thanked us for the lovely podcast. So yeah, hello to you. I didn't catch your name, so hello to you out there.
Just on Rob Byron, who is the pitch announcer. I mean, yes, the thing is, if you get to spend time with all these great people, of course you hear stories. But I loved his about saying that he got the job through Freddie Shepherd. He was a club DJ, and he DJed at Freddie Shepherd's wedding. And so that was how he got asked to do the job in the first place, also 25 years ago. And he said at one point, Freddie Shepherd wanted him to put on the Cheeky Girls at the same time as Local Hero at the start. And it was, can you imagine Newcastle still running on to the pitch to the Cheeky Girls? And Rob made them, very funny fella. He made the point, said, look, man, you've got a manager who picks the team and you don't interfere. Well, that's a different story. But you've got the manager to pick the team, and there's a reason you've got for that. Please let me choose the music.
I have to say, mind, that is my dream job, stadium announcer at St James's Park. I'd like to officially throw my hat into the ring if Rob ever considers retiring. I'd like to say here and now, I would love that job. Just sit up there. Right then, listen to this. Here we go. And then stick a load of Sam Fender tunes on.
He says that nobody ever believes him when he tells them that he's the match announcer at St James. He says he's only got one way of proving it. He says, "Oh, go on then, say enjoy the game." So he does that. He's like, "Oh, fucking hell, it is you." But yeah, and you have to commend his musical choices.
Yeah,
I said, "Are there any no-nos?" And he was like, "Queen. There's no excuse for playing Queen ever unless you're champions. Unless you've won the league, then it can be." Yeah, then it's We Are the Champions. Otherwise, no.
We talked before, Chris, as well about the atmosphere rolling onto the pitch, and I believe you spoke to Dan Byrne on Saturday as well after the game, and he had a few things to say about the atmosphere.
Yeah, like, emotional. Like, I had my daughter and my son were there today, and that's the first time they've probably been at a game and stuff. So it's emotional anyway. Like, seeing all the flags out, knowing all my family and friends are here, and Local Hero and stuff. But as soon as the whistle goes, it's sort of game mode. So.
Is that who you waved at in the corner?
Yeah, up in the top. There was about 10 or 12 of my family. That my brother's back from Australia. He'd been over there for a few years. That's the first time he's seen us playing the Premier League for Newcastle. So it's just a proud moment for me and my family. So.
Wonderful stuff. Absolutely brilliant. Dan Byrne, what a man. We're going to get on to talking about the match in a little bit, but Dan Byrne, I mean, he's just, I think he's living the Geordie dream, isn't he, Chris? It's fantastic stuff.
He is. I mean, that was the first time I'd spoken to him since May when I did the big interview with him. And no, he's still riding that crest of a wave. He really is embracing life in Newcastle. I think that it's raised his levels. He's still playing on adrenaline to an extent. And yeah, he was saying how on Saturday, his brother, who lives in Australia, used to share a season ticket with. He was at the Newcastle match at St. James's Park watching his brother Dan play for the first time. His daughter and his son were both there for the first time together as well. And yeah, it's such a special occasion for him, even more so than for all the fans inside the ground. And that says something, because Saturday felt like such an occasion.
It really did. We're going to get on to talking about that game in just a moment. But if you want to read George's magnificent piece on A Day in the Life behind the scenes at St. James's Park, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months right now. Just go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and you get full access to all the great writing and ad-free versions of The Athletic's podcasts. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Sign up now.
Come on, you Mackies.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Right then, chaps, on to the game. And anyone who was worried we'd lose our momentum over the summer would have been greatly encouraged by the result and the performance. Chris, all the same characteristics of last year's win and run, plus some improvements as well. It was a good showing from Newcastle, wasn't it?
It was an excellent performance from Newcastle. I suppose the only negative you can bring into it is the fact that they only won 2-0, because given the dominance that they had, given the amount of territory, the amount of possession, the number of shots, the number of openings, not just shots. I think they got into a lot of very good positions. That was so encouraging, the way that they did take the game to Forest from the very first whistle. They pressed high. They had a higher defensive line than they've had in a long, long while. I think they averaged winning the ball 42 metres from their own line, which was more than 15 metres from where it had been a year previously. They were trying different things. They had overlaps. They had underlaps. You had Bruno Guimaraes in the middle, knitting everything together in the way that he does, with some superb passing and just clever movement and clever use of the ball. And yeah, really, it was excellent. I just think the only negative, as I said, is that it wasn't more than 2-0 and should have been more than 2-0. But there was never, I know that there was probably different for fans in the stand, but I never felt Newcastle were under any pressure. Before they scored the first goal, it was one of those ones, maybe it won't be their day in front of goal. But I never thought that they were going to concede. And when they went ahead, I never thought they were going to let that go, because they just seemed to know what the game plan was. They seemed to be supremely well drilled in how they're trying to play. And then they enacted out on the pitch, and that was what was wonderful to see.
I haven't seen a Newcastle team that dominant, George, for a long time. But I mean, Forest weren't great, were they? But they weren't allowed to be by Newcastle.
No, and that was a question I put out on Twitter as well. I mean, when were the last time Newcastle was so dominant at home? I mean, a couple of people mentioned Arsenal at the end of the last season. Now, I think that was an astonishing occasion. And I think the more I think about it, arguably the best that I've ever witnessed at St. James's, just for all the stuff around it, you know, but mainly the noise. But I think the atmosphere was part of what got to Arsenal, and Newcastle were brilliant, but they weren't dominant in terms of everything. They weren't dominant in terms of the ball and possession. And for so long, we've been used to sort of seeing Newcastle shy away from the ball. We saw a little bit of a move away from that in the early weeks and months under Eddie Howe, gradually trying to shift it. But Newcastle were dominant everywhere, you know. And yeah, that the thing about Forest was interesting, because I thought it was a brilliant first fixture. just as a not as a, you know, from a neutral perspective, I would have wanted to watch that match to see. And I kind of half thought that Forrest would kind of come into it all guns blazing, but it was kind of the opposite. They looked very disjointed. And Newcastle imposed.
They've bought a lot of players, though, haven't they, George? They've bought an awful lot of players, and you can't expect that all to gel within a couple of weeks.
No, it's an interesting. I've sort of said this a little bit. Perhaps, you know, we've heard Scott Parker in the last kind of couple of weeks talk about how he's not signed. That, you know, they'd not signed anybody at Bournemouth, and he was really worried about that. But then you see the Fulham performance, and then you see that Bournemouth performance. And I think sometimes when you come up, that momentum actually carries you through. And if you've done what Forest have kind of had to do in some ways because of the amount of loan players they had last season, they've changed things so much. Does that momentum maybe slide away from you a little bit? Perhaps it does. But no, Newcastle made them look ordinary as well. They didn't give them any peace, any rest. And, you know, we talked earlier about the atmosphere of the day. That was just enhanced by the team. So often, you know, so often the team have taken away from the atmosphere in the past or whatever, but those two things went together. It was so encouraging to see, and it was good to watch.
It was.
And that's like worth repeating. Newcastle were good to watch.
Yeah, 100%.
I want to disagree with you slightly, though, in terms of with Forest, because Forest were abysmal, and Newcastle did contribute to that, but it will be interesting to see how Newcastle take that forward. You know, when you beat what's in front of you on the day, but I've seen a lot of teams at Newcastle, even Newcastle sides in the last 4 or 5 years, who sat very deep, and that's the way that they've played, but that they've made a low block. Forest played with a low block, and I've never seen a team play with a low block and yet manage to create so much space for the opposition regularly on both sides, certainly in the first half.
Why is that disagreeing with me?
In terms of you saying that Newcastle made Forest better, I think Newcastle did contribute a lot to that, but I also think Forest were just very poor in general. I think they were massively off the pace for a Premier League side, and I think they just weren't very well drilled at all, and that played into Newcastle's hands as well. I think it was a bit of both.
You're just disagreeing with me for the sake of that. You've effectively just said the same. I use the word abysmal.
It's adding something extra. It's not a disagreement.
Fine, yeah.
If we'd said Forest were amazing and we were amazing, then fair enough.
Chris, I think you're abysmal. I think you're abysmal.
And you'd be right.
Right. Hey, pedantic pony.
Well, we'll disagree agree to differ.
I think one of the things we can agree on, Chris, though, is that midfield trio really asserted their dominance in the middle of the park. And it was the heart of the performance was born out of that midfield, wasn't it? Bruno, Joe Linton, and Joe Willock as well just looked imperious on the day, didn't they?
They did, and I particularly want to give a shout out for Joe Willock, because before the game, I think he was maybe one of the players who, and myself included in this, people thought was maybe a little bit fortunate to start, because Sean Longstaff had been very good during pre-season. If John Joe Shelvey had been fit, not sure that Willock would have started either, but he was excellent. He covered so much ground.
He did.
Carried a lot of ball, made a lot of runs, overlapping and underlapping runs, and they really complemented each other nicely, those three. Bruno sitting deep is slightly different to when Shelvey's there. He plays in a different way, but he's just so composed on the ball. Those passes he played in, particularly to Almiron, the little threaded through balls, and then he's even controlling the ball in his own box and calmly just jogging across when other players would try and boot it clear. And then on the other side, you've got Joe Linton, and he's just energy and power and athleticism, and he just seems to get better every week in that role.
He does.
I don't think they'll come across a more pedestrian midfield all season. I thought Jack Colback was far and away Forest's best player, and I didn't even think he was great. But equally, the Newcastle's midfield smothered them, and they made Forest really, really struggle and suffer all afternoon. And that was where Newcastle's victory came from. That was the root of it.
They did, and Joe Linton was box to box constantly, wasn't he? And a powerful presence in the midfield. He was receiving the ball from all angles under all kinds of pressure. And I think I can only remember one point when he relinquished possession, and it was blown up for a foul as well. Joe Linton was just astonishing, and Bruno as well. George, we have to talk about Bruno.
Yeah,
there's something about that lad. Sorry, I don't mean to jump in as you're about to pull the trigger, but there's something about that lad. He's got it, hasn't he? He's got magic.
Yeah.
There's just something about the way he plays football which is on a different plane, a different level to anything I've seen. It's like he's playing chess two moves ahead from the other players in the midfield, and it's amazing to watch. I absolutely love him. I'm in love with him, George. I'm in love with him.
I don't think we've seen a player like him for a long time. And no, you make that point. Alan from work on Match of the Day made that point too, showing those little clips of him on the ball and then looking up or looking backwards to scan what was around him, to see what's in front of him. And then he's capable of playing those passes. We said it last season, when Newcastle have players at the same level of him, Newcastle will have a very, very special team. And they've already got the hallmarks of a good team. And yeah, no, I mean, Jolinton, you mentioned Jolinton as well. Yeah, fabulous. And he did, I think it was for Wilson's goal, wasn't it? Where he started the move through that physical presence, winning the ball, and then he played the pass that Wilson converted, showing both elements to the match. Yeah, that was very special.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to talk about, I mean, we spoke about Dan Byrne already, but him and Fabian Scher at the back, a little bit of a surprising choice maybe. Some people thought Sven Botman might have been the one that got the nod. George, it was great to see Fabian Scher taking his goal so well. What an absolute rocket that was. And a carbon copy of the goal against Burnley as well that he scored a few years ago under Rafa.
Yeah, so at this point, as Chris has given me some grudging praise, I suppose I've got to return the favour now, because Chris has talked and written and suggested that Dan Byrne might keep his place. I sort of thought that after a full pre-season, unlike in January where Bruno came in and was then sort of integrated into the team, I thought that Botman would start. Having sort of been around and played all summer, but Chris got that spot on. But it's fair enough. It does set a bit of a tone, that, doesn't it? I mean, Botman is the poster boy for what they've done this summer. Great things expected of him, but he's got to earn his place. And Byrne didn't put a foot wrong, and you know, so that does set a tone. I mean, it does set a tone. He will get plenty of football, Sven Botman. But it's not just about players coming in, keeping their place, you know, because of reputation or whatever. They've got to earn it. And if you have that across the pitch, then you're only going to get better. And it's what good players want. So fair play to Chris. You called that one.
Absolutely. Chris, how about that thunder bastard from Fabian Scher? What a goal.
It was a wonderful goal. I quite liked Howe's description afterwards, where he basically said that when Scher had the ball and he shaped a shoot, he thought that it was the wrong decision, and he was probably going to make one of those notes on his tiny little notepad that he's got to say, yeah. Don't do that again. And he said, but
Jason, have a word with him.
Exactly. And I think it was a good word that he used to describe Scher. He said Scher can do the unorthodox, and that's what it was. As you say, that. There's a few people who've clipped up that goal and the Burnley goal from a few years ago on social media, and they are almost identical. It is astonishing the way that they hit,
even running away and doing the celebration as well. It's exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly. And also they also hit the almost identical part of the post and to go in as well. It was a wonderful strike, and Newcastle sort of have needed that for everything that they've done up to that point of the game. They did lack a little something in the final third in terms of the final ball, the final decision, where they were, and that just liberated everyone and just released. If there was tension starting to build at that point, that just released it all, and they really needed it, and we'll get onto it in a second. But then Callum Wilson's finish was just absolutely sublime as well. So
I've still got no idea how he did that.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous. I know he's meant it. He has meant to do it, hasn't he? But just the gymnastics of the whole thing and the way he's flicked his foot at the ball and made it go, because it hasn't gone up over the keeper really high. It's kind of just looped past him.
Yeah, it's very clever. It's like using the pace of the ball. You know, it's like a cricketer sort of guiding the ball, not trying to hit it hard. But
just
like,
down to fine leg.
Yes, that sort of thing. Yeah, it's so beautiful to see. And it's speed of thought. That's one thing. I mean, sometimes I have speed of thought, but then it takes like my body 2.5 months to catch up to what my brain thought. And it's that sort of instantaneous thing where you can picture it in your own head and execute it at the same time. You know, there were some great moments from Wilson. He is a quality player. We're just all absolutely keeping our fingers crossed that he has a fully fit season. But what a great start. You know, he's talked about You know, the odds are against him perhaps to make the England World Cup squad, but that's a great start.
Callum opening day Wilson, we should call him, Chris. Three in the last 3 years on opening day. And at that top end of the pitch as well, Alan St. Maximum was tricky, and he ploughed for us all afternoon, and he had a good go, and Miguel Almirón similarly. But the final product and that last decision and the last ball into the box was just lacking at times, wasn't it? And that's what we were talking about earlier on, when we said Newcastle could have had 4 or 5, but it just wasn't quite there at times.
Now you've come to me because you want me to stick the boot in on Almirón again, don't you? You're trying to tease it. I'm not going to stick the boot in,
you will.
I'm going to say I was very impressed for large stages of what St. Maximán did. I thought that there was a real sense of purpose about him. Large spells on Saturday, certainly first half. I think that he had space to run into, but he used the ball well, and he was willing to move it on rather than just do his tricks and flicks. Almirón, I thought, until the actual final decision, was very good. I thought his running was very good. I thought he got in behind very well. He led that press.
Those outside-in runs that he was doing for Bruno to play the ball through, they were great.
They were, and so that's where you can see the confidence flowing through his veins. Just that issue that I mentioned last week and that I still want him to see is that final decision. There was a few times where he either used his left foot when he should have used his right, or the ball wasn't right. There was a few times Wilson was shouting at him here and there, the ball should have been there, or I wanted it here. And Wilson only had 6 touches first half, so the two wide players, as well as they played, and the other attacking players, they didn't get Wilson in the game enough, and he didn't get himself in the game enough. And that's what Newcastle need to work on. They need to use him more. And that's why I still think that they need that extra something in terms of ingenuity in the final third. But they'll need that, I think, in the transfer market.
Yeah, definitely. And also, Eddie Howe was asked about expectation management as well, and quite a refreshing answer from him. Let's have a listen to that.
It's been a well-used question throughout the summer. I'd say, yes, of course, we have to be considered in terms of our expectations, but I want us to dream also, and I want us to have the belief going into every game that we can win.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that, George.
Yeah, I love it too. I mean, he's kind of killed himself a little bit there by saying, expectation management, but please dream.
Dream big.
But in all seriousness, I love that. I love that too, because for too long it hasn't been expectation management. It's been expectation crushing, and ticking along. And yeah, okay, it's, you know, I think we all know that this is going to be this is going to take a while. It's going to be an evolutionary thing. Newcastle are getting better. It's going to take a while, but at the same time, we can all dream. That's what we're in it for. It's the dream factory. It's the dream business. That's why, you know, we want to be able to picture Newcastle's captain, whoever it is, in a few years' time, lifting the trophy. That's what we want, because, you know, that's the ultimate, isn't it? That's the whole point of football, really, when you come to it. So, yeah, I love that answer. It's like, stick with us, be patient, and we'll get there. We'll make your dreams come true.
Absolutely. I think that's something we can all get behind. Another thing we can probably all get behind is that Brighton at the weekend will prove a much sterner test for Newcastle, a well-established Premier League club, and we'll be going down there. George, you looking forward to that one?
Well, I don't know if you're asking me that to get a rise out of me.
No, I wouldn't.
To be fair, I
actually
really am looking forward to it, and I wonder if Chris has a little bit of self-loathing going on now that he's going to miss Newcastle's first away game of the season, and I'm going to be there. It's going to be a challenge. Logistically, it's going to be a challenge for Newcastle's travelling supporters. But honestly, I'm like a kid again. That is how I feel about Newcastle. It is my job, but I feel so happy and I feel so content about the way things are going. I feel so excited about the games. I felt emotional on Saturday. I can't wait to see what happens at Brighton. Can you imagine me saying this even 2 or 3 weeks ago?
This is not the George Colton I know.
I'm looking forward. I was looking forward to Forest so much, and I'm already looking forward to Brighton. And that is, you know, that's what football should feel like for us, for the match to finish, and can't wait to go back there again. You know, even if it's to put something right.
Yeah.
You know, just wanting for the next fixture to come around. So I am actually looking really much forward to Brighton.
Well, you didn't say thank you, but you're welcome, George.
Fuck off, Chris.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, and I'm back with some good news. I'll be hosting the Athletic Football Podcast 4 times a week. I'll be joined by the likes of Adam Crafton, David Ornstein, Flo Lloyd-Hughes, Matt Slater, and plenty more of The Athletic's brilliant journalists. And together, we'll bring you the best insight into the biggest football stories. So that's every single week, Monday to Thursday. And if you like what we do, then please follow and subscribe to The Athletic Football Podcast in all the usual places.
Right, have you two sorted your differences out now, have you?
I love Chris so much. I hope every time... So a fella came up to me. Chris wasn't there, actually, at halftime, and I won't name him, but he said some very nice things about the podcast. He said, you mustn't... Don't bully Chris too much. And I said, yeah, I know. It's part of our shtick. I'm so proud Chris is my colleague. I love him to bits. And yeah, this is Joel. It's just podcast persona, isn't it?
It is. It's not the real world. Chris is actually very much the domineer and force of this trio whenever we,
well,
we meet.
Hence why I'm going to hence why I'm going to Brighton, yeah.
Right then. Chris, you asked Eddie Howe about the transfer situation after the game on Saturday. Any updates there? What's going on?
Well, I'd asked him, basically, it was only 24 hours, 36 hours since I'd spoken to him before, so I'd asked him A, if there was an update, and there wasn't. But B, I'd said to him, did Saturday change in his mind at all what he was looking for? And he said, no, I'm happy with the business we've done so far. I'm happy with the squad, but I still, he sort of said what I said before. I still think we need that extra bit of quality. And what he was referring to is in the final third. He wants extra options. You looked at the bench on Saturday, and it wasn't like Newcastle had a game changer to really bring on. He didn't turn to Elliot Anderson, who maybe could be that, but that would be a lot of pressure on his shoulders. Doesn't have that attacking influence. So where Newcastle are is that they, House described it on Friday, is they aren't any further forward really since they made the last signing, which was Sven Botman, was confirmed on July the 1st. And the Hugo Ekitike deal falling through really did affect them in that sense. James Maddison, they made 2 bids for. Leicester aren't entertaining that. Leicester end, my understanding is they're adamant he's not leaving.
Yeah.
I don't think Newcastle can match the terms that it would take to bring him, so I think that one's unlikely. Benjamin Sesko, who's someone else they've looked at RB Leipzig, reports today that he's going to go to RB Leipzig from Salzburg, so that there's someone who might go over there as well. I think that it's looking increasingly likely that it may be Newcastle get one permanent and then maybe one loan signing later in the window. Someone like Armando Broglie or others at Chelsea, my understanding is they've asked about others there. Other players at top six clubs as well, but they are actively working. Dan Ashworth is actively working on that front, and there is still a confidence they will bring in a couple of players between now and the end of the window, and I do think that they need them.
On Dan Ashworth, one very quick thing. He did a tour of the press room and the press box before the match on Saturday and said hello to people, which was good and which was nice. Another sign of sort of the glasnost or perestroika, one of those phrases that's going on at St James's, and so that's encouraging. I did also last week, after we did the podcast, have an interaction with someone at the top of the club just about where things stood, just in very sort of general terms, and there was that feeling of positivity that they're heading the right direction. Yes, absolutely, acknowledgement that there were maybe one, possibly two players short, but there was still time in the window. It's a tough window for good players, for great players, and there's that feeling that things could still shake loose, and really just that, just not a plea for patience, but just that sense of, you know, we'll get there. And so, as far as I'm concerned, they deserve that patience, and I think they will. I think they will get there.
It's been interesting this week. There's been a sort of almost a slight light dusting of hysteria just sort of rippling through social media at times when people have been thinking about transfers and why haven't we done this and why haven't we done that, and we have money to do this and why haven't we paid the money? How can we expect to compete if we're not prepared to pay the fees? And it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because there's all sorts of things that need to be taken into account. It's not as easy as just going and bidding for a player and handing the money over and getting him. And, you know, the club are very, very aware of financial fair fair play and the money that they've got to spend. And it's not just the money they've got to spend now, it's the money they've got to spend going forward in the next window and the window after that and the window after that. It's a long-term strategy and it's a process, Chris, isn't it? It's got to be done carefully. You can't just throw shit until some sticks and see what happens.
No, and there's a very good thread on Swiss Rambles Twitter feed, which I would recommend any Newcastle fan to look at, which goes into a lot of the financial restrictions that Newcastle and other clubs face and tries to explain why they can't just suddenly spend an inordinate amount of cash. Eddie Howe was very strong on this on Friday. He was towards the end of last season, and as George and I have repeatedly spoken about and as the owners themselves spoke about with George in February, there are restrictions which prevent Newcastle from being able to just spend all of that money. Eddie Howe actually said it could affect them for a number of years, and that they are having to be smart is the way that he described it in the transfer market, which is why they're looking at things like structured deals, loans with obligations to buy, because their financial revenue streams just aren't sufficient yet to be able to support where they intend to get to. Because it's not just transfer fees, it's also wages. All of this impacts on what Newcastle can do and spend. So as negative as that immediately sounds when you hear it, they have spent the best part of $150 million already on players in 2022. So they have invested, they have done as what they possibly can. They had to spend more than they intended to make sure Newcastle survived, which they did. But also, the fact that Eddie Howe is willing to sign a contract extension at this stage shows that he recognises the ambition is there. I think that there would have been a lot of clubs who would have been very interested in Eddie Howe, given what he's done so far at Newcastle this summer. He really has generated that excitement that was around him when he was doing really well at Bournemouth. I think that's come back and probably progressed even further. Now he's shown he can handle it at a club in Newcastle's spotlight, which is very different to Bournemouth. And so for him to commit, I think that is a very positive sign that he recognises there is ambition. It just has to be tempered ambition. It has to be organic, sustainable growth.
Yes, that contract extension for Eddie Howe, George, great news that, isn't it? And good to have that kind of solidity there as well.
Just very, very good news. Great to, you know, it's that little boost. Okay, they haven't signed anybody, but to get that news on Friday, the day before the match, just sort of lifts everybody again. I suppose a personal sort of little frustration. I wish they would tell us how long that was for. I suppose I can understand the need for commercial sensitivity and things like that. But I guess if other clubs or England or whatever were circling, it wouldn't be very difficult for them to sort of find out. I would prefer to, you know, I don't think it's too much really to sort of know how long it's for. But I mean, that is a very, very minor thing. I'm just delighted he settled right in. He's proven to be that all-in manager that he said he would be at the start. You can't criticise him for anything that he's done at the last season was astonishing. And it's given him and us and the team a bedrock to build on. I can't wait to see what the sort of Eddie Howe is like released from last season when it was about going from game to game, 3 points to 3 points to 3 points. Yes, at the end of the season, that sort of went away, but that was his only priority last season. And now we have a chance to see what an Eddie Howe, who is still here to build, it'll still be a gradual thing, but sort of released, hopefully, from that tension and pressure. Let's see what he can do. And he's just chimed so perfectly with the fans and with the club and what the club needs to do right now. It's just been a great story so far.
Just on the length of the contract, there was a quite bizarre exchange in Eddie Howe's press conference after the game on Saturday, where Simon Bird from the Mirror did ask about the length of the contract, and Howe said, oh, I think we've termed it as long term, haven't we? And then Simon Bird said, well, have you got a number on that? And Howe turned to the press officer sitting next to him and sort of said, well, do we have a number on it? And he replied with, yeah, but that's between you and the club. And Howe himself seemed a little bit confused as to why it can't be out there. So it's all rather odd. We are trying to find out exactly how long it is, but that's for all of the people who are asking out there. The question has been asked, it just hasn't been answered yet.
Chris, I'd like you to find out something else for me as well. Can you put an end to the rumours that Jason Tindall has signed a long-term deal with Tantastic on Heaton High Street as well, please?
That's all. He's got
to maintain that somehow.
He's all natural.
That's all natural, is it? Naturally mahogany.
I love watching Tindall on the touchline as well. It's like very funny. He's always in the ear of the fourth official. There's always like a little exchange of glances with the other bench. There was a bit of that going on against Forest. He's a good, solid character on the touchline. I hope we get to see a bit more of that. And I just love seeing his teeth in those dressing room victory
pictures.
Can't miss
them, can you?
Yeah, it's just great. Great.
He's one of them people, George, isn't he, where I'm so glad that he's on our side, because if he was with anyone else, you'd fucking hate him.
Exactly that.
Hate him if he was with any other team, but because he's ours, he might be a shithouse, but he's our shithouse.
And God bless him for
Absolutely.
That. God bless him.
Brilliant stuff. Right, lads, let's wrap things up. I think we've covered everything. We'll be back next week with another special guest and a bit of reflection on that Brighton game as well. And for now, thanks very much for listening to all of you out there. Remember, you can join The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months right now at theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod. That's it from myself and from George and Chris. Thanks for your time, chaps. And well done, Newcastle United. 3 points on the board after one game. We shall speak to you next week. Thanks a lot, everyone. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.